Okay, so I'm here with Alice Ma, and she's the registered dietitian here on campus. Works primarily with students, but we're really excited to have her on the podcast to speak to faculty and staff. And we'll go ahead and get started. So again, thank you for joining us today. I'd like to start by asking you what a registered dietitian does, if there's any specialties or what's the training, what goes into being in your shoes?
Okay. So thanks for having me, by the way. The first clarification, I think there's a lot of confusion as far as the difference between a dietitian and a nutritionist. So a dietitian has to go through a certain level of schooling in order to become registered, and that involves going through a program that is accredited by the National Council, as well as doing a number of internship hours, as well as passing an examination. Mm-hmm. It's about 4-hour exams, so pretty rigorous. And then in comparison, a nutritionist doesn't really have a legal definition. So really anyone off the street can call themselves a nutritionist. It doesn't necessarily mean they're unqualified, because some of them have, you know, masters in public health or PhDs in nutrition but aren't dietitians. But be aware of that when you read articles or talk to people if they do have any sort of credential to back that up with. But as far as what I do, there are a number of dietitian jobs out there. Mine primarily is categorized as food service, so I work in the food service arena, planning menus, working with students who have allergies, making sure we have healthy options, recipe development, things like that. And you'll see similar positions in hospitals, in hospital food service, in grocery stores have similar positions to mine. The other types of dietitians are more clinically focused, so you'll see them in hospitals, working with patients who have tube feedings, working with doctors and pharmacists and nurses, with patients who get into accidents, or with patients who have lots of nutrition-related diseases, so celiac disease, diabetes, cystic fibrosis, any of those conditions that require a lot of nutrition therapy. Mm-hmm. And then the last one would be a community dietitian, which primarily focuses on education. So you'll see those in nonprofits. Usually, you know, some bigger cities have food pantries that have dietitians on staff, government education programs or child nutrition feeding programs, any sort of food assistant program employs dietitians as well.
Wow, that's actually a really big range, you know, and not everybody gets the opportunity to interact with the dietitian, but it sounds like we kind of do it all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there are also, you know, the miscellaneous jobs. Some dietitians actually blog full time, so their job is just basically sitting at home and writing all the time recipes, because people look online for recipes and that's where they get the information. Or some do private practice as well, out of their own homes.
Okay, wow, that's a huge breadth of opportunities for dietitians. Is it pretty transferable? Like you can move between kind of your area of focus, or is
definitely
it like a specialty?
Yeah. So I know a lot of classmates in school. We had an emphasis where students could specialize in sports nutrition. A lot of them went through that program, but they ended up working in clinical because they ended up doing their internship with a clinical dietitian and ended up loving it, and so went clinical afterwards. So there's no really one thing that you stick. You can definitely transfer it between.
Wow. Okay. Fascinating. So moving on here, the Cougar Employee Wellness Program. You know, we work with faculty and staff who are interested in, you know, that. Common is mostly weight loss. You know, people come in and they're like, I want to lose weight. And we know that, maybe you and I know that it's a little bit deeper of a question than that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just a pure weight loss goal. What role does diet have on weight loss? And can I lose weight with exercise or diet only?
So weight loss in its simplest form is really using more calories than you're consuming. And that is created through both exercise, creating a deficit through exercise, or by eating less. And so theoretically, you could lose weight just doing exercise more or eating less, but it's not recommended because it's very difficult. So for example, you can eat less and not exercise, but you're going to find it very difficult because most people like to eat a lot. Yeah. And so just by cutting calories, you're going to eat a lower volume, and that's going to be that's going to make a lot of people angry, you know. Mm-hmm. Or you can
grouchy.
Yeah, right. And if you plan on exercising and not changing your diet, you're going to find it very hard to exercise well, because food is the fuel for exercise. Mm-hmm. For example, you know, a donut is about 200 calories, an average glazed donut. Same calories as a peanut butter with whole grain toast, 200 calories as well. But the whole grain toast and peanut butter has protein, and there's whole grains, there's fiber, and that can fuel your brain, that can fuel your body with some protein to exercise, whereas the donut's just sugar and fat, and that's going to raise your cholesterol, raise your blood sugar, and send you to a sugar crash later on.
Yeah, and then long-term risk for other types of diseases.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh, very interesting. And we do get some folks that have questions about, well, what about cutting out beverages? Maybe they cut out like their soda for the day, mm-hmm. or they cut out, you know, instead of having three glasses of, you know, beverage of choice, they, mm-hmm. they have one. Is that a wise area to start cutting back in calories?
Yeah, definitely. Beverages are one of those hidden calorie sources. People just don't count them when they're thinking about their food because they're just thinking about food usually. And calories can range in beverages from, you know, anywhere from 100 to, you know, 300 for like a large soda, depending on how much you're drinking. And calories from beverages are kind of a good way to start off because it's kind of one easy switch. So if you cut back just to one a day or two a day, from 3 to 5 drinks a day, that's a significant calorie difference. That's probably 200, 300 calories fewer. And that's a good, small, sustainable change that you could make and build on that long term.
And it seems like you save a lot of money that way, too.
Yeah,
some of those
for sure.
beverages are, you know, $2 to $4.
Yeah, if you're getting a coffee at Starbucks, you know, coffee frappuccino, 400-ish calories, $4, $5.
$400. Yeah. Holy. that's incredible. Okay, and then I also get exposed to folks that want to have more of a plant-based diet.
Uh-huh.
Is there a way to have, like, a well-rounded diet with just plant sources?
For sure, yeah. So personally speaking, I am vegan. I've been vegan for about 2.5 years, going on 3. And it is definitely possible. It requires a little bit of thinking and planning. But really anything you make with meat and dairy, you can substitute those ingredients and have a completely plant-based meal mm-hmm. and meet all your nutrition needs through, you know, either finding different sources of nutrition or fortified cereals, fortified milks. A lot of non-dairy milks replace, you know, regular dairy milk, and those are fortified with the exact same nutrients as dairy milk.
Okay. And then, like, milk, I'm thinking protein. Some of the pushback I hear about sometimes with plant-based is, like, I'm not going to get all of my protein or all my amino acids. So it is possible.
Yeah. So the number one question I get asked as a vegetarian vegan is, where do I get my protein? And the truth is, there's really no such thing as protein deficiency in America because we eat more than we actually need. You know, we can get things, you may get less protein on a vegetarian vegan diet, but it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be deficient because you actually don't need as much protein as you're consuming on a meat-based diet. But things like tofu, beans, garbanzo beans, I like a lot, lentils, even whole grains, so brown rice and quinoa are a source of protein as well, and even some vegetables.
Hmm. All right. So there are often, you know, recommendations for what we should be eating.
Mm-hmm.
Can you speak a little bit more to, you know, like 5 servings of X, Y, or Z fruits and vegetables? Is there room for individual variation in kind of food choices, or should most people really try to align to these kind of population recommendations? Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so those are developed through the USDA, the government website, and through primarily distributed through the choosemyplate.gov website, which is the government run website. It talks about the 5 a day and why it's important, all those food groups, how many servings per day that is. And that's a good general recommendation for most of the population. When they formulate those recommendations, they take into consideration just like average weight and average caloric intake of an average American, of average height, average size, average activity level. And so that's a good kind of starting point, but it doesn't quite fit everyone. So for example, I'm a smaller person, so I won't necessarily need as many calories as the average American because I'm tinier.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking to some of those other diet, special dietary needs, the choosemyplate.gov has kind of accommodations for vegetarians and vegans as well. It's just kind of, you have to look a little bit deeper for those kind of exceptions. And there are other websites that are credible sources of those information.
Okay.
Pieces.
And the MyPlate website, didn't they change their logo? They used to be the food pyramid.
Yes.
And then
so
there's this person like running up the side.
Right.
Now it's something different.
So it develops, it gets changed, reviewed and changed every 5 years because we're constantly finding new information out there about nutrition and diet and exercise. Mm-hmm. So it gets updated every couple of years.
Okay. And then the combination of, you know, back to the idea of like losing weight,
mm-hmm.
the combination of diet and exercise, is that why they put that person running up the side of the pyramid?
Yeah, so before it used to be based off of, it used to be just diet, right? It mm-hmm. used to just have the 5 or so food groups in the pyramid,
mm-hmm.
Whole grains, I think grains was on the bottom or something like that, and fats
yeah.
and oils are on the top. And they added the exercise piece because they did find that, you know, general health, you know, weight loss included is dependent on exercise level as well as diet.
Mm-hmm. And something else that I hear about, you know, working with clients through the employee wellness program is keeping energy levels up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all have, you know, intense jobs where you're scheduling a lot of meetings, you're having to like move from A to B, and then you're trying to fit a workout into the middle of mm-hmm. your lunch hour. Could you speak about food and maybe eating for energy?
Yeah. So I guess it all starts off with, you know, in the morning, what you're eating as your first meal. And that can be defined as breakfast, or it could be like a mid-morning snack. Some people aren't hungry in the morning, which is fine. They can have a mid-morning snack before lunch. And that's really kind of your starting point for the whole day, sets you up for the whole day. So that meal should be kind of the biggest and kind of the most probably, you should put the most thought into that meal because that fuels you for the rest of the day. Mm-hmm. So including things like whole grains in that meal, as well as a fruit or vegetable, and then some protein. And that combination of all those keeps you full for the whole day instead of just having, you know, like a donut, like we talked about, where it's just sugar and you'll eat it and you'll feel full for maybe an hour or so, and then later on you'll get hungry again.
Crash. Okay. I know everybody will be, maybe they'll have mixed feelings about that, because I know a lot of people that don't eat breakfast, but you said you can have that later snack and that.
Yeah,
that
it just really depends on what works for you, yeah.
Okay, but avoid the donuts.
Yeah, for sure. Or limit the donuts, not necessarily avoid, yeah.
Oh, there we go.
Moderation.
Okay. Moderation.
Yep.
And then I'm going to skip forward here. So I've heard that, I think people will also be interested in this, that the food labels are changing. That's
yes.
a fairly big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a lot of money in changing food labels.
Right, you know, a lot of planning.
What does that do for individuals, the consumers? Mm-hmm. I was hoping you could speak about that a little bit.
Yeah, so the new food label regulations go into effect July of 2018. And the biggest changes, one of the biggest changes will be just simply font size. So
really?
If you notice right now, the nutrition labels, all the sizes of the words are the same. Uh-huh. But the new labels will have an emphasis on serving size. So that will be a little bit bigger and in bold, so people actually read that, because sometimes that's looked over. You know, mm-hmm. if you eat some Oreos, you'll have, it's like a 3-cookie serving, but you'll eat 5 and think that's the same calorie amount as what's on the label. And then the calorie amount will also be emphasized as well, kind of in bigger, bolder font. And then they are also actually changing the serving size regulations. So to be more realistic. So a lot of times if you get a bottle of soda, most people would get a bottle of soda or a juice and drink the whole thing and you know, in one sitting pretty easily, mm-hmm. or like a bag of chips. But in reality, if you read the serving size on the labels right now, a bottle is probably about 1.5 servings as opposed to just one. Mm-hmm. And so you're getting, you know, more calories than you thought you were, even though you drank the whole thing. And so they're going to change that to be one bottle, one serving. Or another example is, instead of half a cup of ice cream being a serving, it's going to be about 2/3 of a cup, because okay. they felt that was more realistic.
That's more reasonable for me.
Right.
Yeah, right.
And then the other thing is, another big thing with that is just the sugar. So added sugar versus natural sugar, because if you eat like a granola bar, the granola bar has fruit in it, and it also has added sugar in it from regular sugar or honey or one of those sugar sweeteners. And you don't really know how much is actually the added sugar and how much is the fruit sugar.
Interesting.
Same thing with yogurt. So yogurt with fruit in it often has added sugar as well. And because yogurt also has milk, which contains lactose, which is also a sugar, you can't really tell how much is actually the added sugar, how much is the milk sugar, unless you actually compare it to, let's say, the same brand of yogurt in the plain flavor, so you can actually compare the two. And so they're going to change it, so you actually have to write down the amount of added sugar and then the amount of total sugar as well.
Oh, it makes me wonder how that's going to affect profit margins for some of these.
Right, because you'll actually see what's really.
Because if you add a bunch of sugar, because your product tastes bad,
right?
You know, without it.
Yeah. And a lot of fat-free products, they add sugar to fat-free products to make it taste good without the fat.
Oh.
But still sell it as healthy.
Yeah, yeah. Food for thought. Yep. No pun intended, but
right.
That's really interesting. And then I guess, given our time here, I would like to end on, you know, behavior change, or, you know, deciding that you want to eat better for energy or for weight loss or even for weight gain. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes it's a real struggle to change some sort of behavior so you can see the results, or so you can stick to it. Mm-hmm. And then maybe you feel really guilty because you fell off the wagon and, oh gosh, that pizza happened and that beverage. I was wondering if you had one or two like home run, you know, kind of tips that everybody could take away as far as, you know, changing, you
yeah.
know, food behaviors.
Yeah. So we talked about this a little bit, but just really making small changes at a time, because a lot of times we'll go from 0 to 100 within a day and end up failing because that's a really big goal to eat completely, you know, have, you know, the perfect diet from day 0 to day 1 and making those changes overnight. And that's not really a sustainable way to do it because it sets us up for failure.
Mm-hmm.
it's a lot to take in at once. So making small changes at a time, you know, cutting out, you know, one soda beverage a day, or switching a whole grain or a grain-based item for a whole grain. Let's say you eat white rice, switch to brown rice, and that's one small change you can make over the course of a few days, and then build on that, you know, in the course of a couple of weeks. And the next week, you know, set another goal to eat more fruit, maybe one more piece of fruit or vegetable during the day, and make those changes over time rather than doing them all at once.
Okay.
And then also making room for, you know, we talked about moderation, making room for desserts and stuff, because eating is fuel, but food is also a form of pleasure for us. Mm-hmm. So making room for those desserts, if you say today that you're never going to eat desserts again, that's not a realistic way to enjoy life and, you know, go throughout life. You're probably going to hate yourself in the next few days without dessert. So making room for those indulgences as well.
Nice. Yeah, and then with the labels changing, maybe we can actually know kind of the calories that we're getting from that and, the added sugars and things. Great advice. Thank you. With that, we really appreciate your time. We appreciate what you do on campus.
Thank you.
And thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you. This is a lot of fun.